I just don't think that he would really. I think he wants people to see the dick is the thing.
Well, I mean, I've heard you make, you and Branson have made similar criticisms of some of their performers. Like, Branson, for instance, has said the new barber never cuts hair anymore, which is just, like, frankly, not true. It's just not true at all. But Pants Dude, I mean, like, there's genuine, like, shock and, like, terror and humiliation when the elevator tears off his pants and you see his giant cock. I think he's, like, you know, I think he's, like, actually an amazing comedic performer, and that, like, after the military tribunals, after Mackinon, like, you know, executes Josh Holloway and everyone and this country, we can take this country back and we go back to normal, that Pants Dude can make the crossover from pornography to regular movies and be in a series of movies about, like, you know, like a scientist who has to develop a serum, but his pants keep falling down.
I mean, it's about time we got just broad slapstick back. I mean, comedy, verbal comedy has clearly hit a dead end now. Like, it's no good.
I was watching a trailer for a movie that's about, like, insufferable New Yorkers dating each other on Tinder. Ooh. And, like, man.
I, like, was talking to somebody and I just said offhandedly this idea. Somebody was talking about a new show on Netflix. I'm like, oh, is it this? And they said no. And I'm like, wait a minute. How is this not a show? It's a show, and it's a protagonist, either a man or a woman, whatever, going on different Tinder dates. Every episode is a different Tinder date. How is a show yet?
There is kind of a show like that. It's called, like, Dating Around or some shit. It's a pretty good, that's, like, the best dating show. And it just, like, it'll be, they'll go into a random city and, like, it'll focus on, like, one man or one woman going on a series of, like, four or five different dates. Mm. And, like, there'll be, like, one episode is lesbians, one episode is, like, old guy dating old women.
Ah.
And it's, that's it. I mean, that's, like, the best of the dating shows. It's very well done. It's very understated.
See, I'm thinking of a show where it's the same protagonist going on different dates each episode. And the through line is them, like, dealing with the death of their father or something. And
oh, then you mean they, like, find, a fictionalized.
They account. Find, yeah, exactly. And they find a treasure map.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool.
I mean, physical comedy aside, I appreciate the pants guy just for, like, the awareness he raises about how dangerous escalators and exercise equipment can be. I mean, to your penis.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think I speak for all of us when I say, like, my number one fear, it's not, like, terrorism, it's not COVID, it's not even the environment. It is getting my dick sliced off by things. And every time you're near an escalator or something that can grab the leg of your pants or even go up high enough to mangle your shorts, that is two layers of protection gone. And it's easier for, like, a broken glass bottle or a particularly sharp fan to cut your dick off in the middle of Macy's.
That's called, that's called fan death.
Yeah, that's what they're afraid of in Korea.
That's what everyone in Korea is terrified of. Well, I don't know if you can, the sharp-eared listener might have already discerned it, but it's one of those increasingly rare special occasions in which we are all back in my living room, and, you know, when the boys are back in town, we're doing one thing and one thing only. That's right, watching gay porn.
Yeah.
Watching videos of some guy's giant cock popping out of his gym shorts.
I will say this. Did there, from the gay porn I've seen retweeted by my friends, you know, Palma and Bob, like, the comedic element of it, the intentional comedic element of it, is superior to straight porn. There just aren't any big laughs in straight porn anymore, I don't think.
there's less opportunity for, like, really playing with the medium.
Yeah.
You know, just, like, having, like, what is comedy?
There is, this isn't necessarily, like, gay porn, but it's, like, Andrew found these guys who are, like, middle-aged British guys who have, like, a basketball shorts fetish. Their thing is to put on really shiny basketball shorts and jack off and cum in them. And then, like, sell the shorts to other British guys. They all look like Norman Reedus if he never made it.
I'm surprised basketball shorts made it over there. They don't really like that game in the UK.
It's hilarious. They're like, they, like, now, like, have a basic knowledge of, like, the NCAA because of how much they love jacking off in basketball shorts. That is, like, Thomas Friedman should write about that as, like, a victory of globalization. That, like, 50 years ago, it was impossible to imagine, like, British guys getting into basketball shorts and coming in them and selling them to each other and creating a microeconomy in, like, Leeds. But now, because they can go on YouTube and watch, like, KU or Duke,
then they see those players and they see their shiny shorts and they're like, I need to jack off in them, or I need to buy a pair that someone jacked off in.
I mean, I got to say, for my money's worth, the best basketball shorts to jack off in and come all over, it got to be UNC Powder Blues, baby. Tar Heels all the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can really see the stains on them.
Yeah.
They really show up.
And those are for like, yeah, for a certain type of American, those are like the premium shorts. You know, the white guy with UNC Powder Blue shorts who's just always pacing around a train station.
All those British guys are now standing for Labour boroughs.
Yeah, I did.
Keir Starmer has put them up against Momentum candidates.
I did look up and down one of the guys' timelines, and he's like anti-Starmer but anti-Boris, but I don't think he's like a Corbynite.
He's a Lib Dem.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what being a Lib Dem means. You're like, I have a small apparel, secondhand apparel business. I want to pay lower taxes.
Well,
he was really anti-police.
They're the ones that are trying to stop. They're trying to stop them from doing this.
That's what I got ticketed for in Scotland. I was doing that when we were getting on the train. Like I always do. Like I have no problem doing it in America. No one even bats an eye at me. On my way here, no one batted an eye at me doing that. I was grabbing my shiny purple shorts and just busting a load, and it was running into my socks, and it created like a unified crust from my hip bone to the bottom of my feet. And no one, it's just regular here. Everyone does it. I go over there. The first time I do it, I get a fucking ticket.
The damn Bobbies nicked you. And then they yanked your shorts down on the train, and everyone was just like, Mike, stop.
I was like, oh. That's what Avengement was about. That's the crime they were doing.
That was the crime.
They had to steal people's houses to jack off in their basketball shorts.
They set people up to have their shorts pulled down in public, and then they're like, all right, here's the deal. You're going to give us your house, so we're going to put this on the internet.
In Avengers 3, they'll finally reveal how they're making any money off that.
Well, boys, glad to be back in the same room. I guess we should start. Where else are we going to go? Afghanistan. Folks, if you thought we could spend 2 weeks evacuating tens of thousands of people with like basically no one dying and not have ISIS, or shall we say another collection of letters, have their say in the matter, you were wrong. Welcome to Benghazi 2.
Yeah.
Was it like 10 or 12 American soldiers got blown up at the Kabul airport today? And get ready to have hearings about this for the next 4 years.
Every time, see you get out, you know, they drag me back in, Jack.
Very, very convenient appearance by an antagonist from two or three seasons ago.
Yeah.
Particularly an antagonist who always, the heads of their operations in every country always seem to be taken out of prison by American forces.
That's weird.
As it happens, just a bad coincidence.
The K in this case, it's ISIS K. The K stands for Khorasan. And if anybody remembers,
the Khorasan group.
The Khorasan group, a group that existed for approximately 2 weeks. Long enough to justify a bombing campaign and then was never heard from again.
They're dabbing on us, folks. They're back.
Wow. We're getting dabbed on.
Yeah, we thought we kicked them into the Sarlacc pit. Damn, we really thought John Kerry got them. He did not.
So, yeah, basically, all of the Republican, like, I've seen, like, at least four or five Republican politicians today call for Biden to be impeached over this.
Yeah, no, they're going hard for it. And they're going to have a lot of support. I mean, it has been startling watching the media that was absolutely in the tank for Biden. Cannot argue that that's not true. You can say whether it was deserved because Trump was a threat to the Republic, whatever bullshit you want to say. The fact is the professional media was propping his ass up like Weekend at Bernie's the entire campaign. And then in the first 6 months of his presidency, look at our big boy passing a bipartisan infrastructure bill. We're so proud of him. It's so good. There's so much good stuff in here. As soon as he gets out of Afghanistan, this is a stunning betrayal and perhaps even a sign of cognitive decline. Now, after this late fucking date, you're going to start talking this shit? It really shows what the actual agenda that matters is.
Yeah, we saw him like a month before this when he was at that CNN town hall go, the thing with the, you just got to go to the FDA and say, we're trying to go to, if you want to go into the room where everyone is, you can pack a lunch. And he was talking about like getting the vaccine approved for 12-year-olds, and they just had, they were like, no, that's a good point, sir. And now apparently 25th Amendment time.
Coming up after the break, a one-on-one interview with Tara Reid.
Yeah.
I will say that they certainly got some ammo if in that Biden press conference that just happened.
I didn't watch it.
Joe's not looking robust. At one point, he just glitched out for, I'd say, a solid 20 seconds.
Okay.
Just say a word, just kind of looked wetly up, kind of looked like he'd forgot where he was.
He noticed the storm was coming. Okay? That's all I'm going to say. Watch out.
Joe is the storm.
Yeah. No.
I mean, this is the one thing that Trump literally never did in 4 years that these Q dipshits were waiting for, which is actually go against the fucking deep state.
Trump literally, in his like third week in office, went to the CIA and was like, you guys can do whatever you want. Yeah.
So, I mean, to the point about like, it is astonishing because Joe Biden is entirely a creation of the media and the people they serve. He's their guy.
Yeah.
He is their guy. And it's amazing. Like, this is just him. This is him ending one war.
Yeah.
This is just him ending one of our empire's like money laundromats.
Yeah.
And like, which is, they should be fucking thanking him for. They should be grateful for him to do this shit.
We're betraying our allies. And look at all the violence that's happening. All that violence that happened for 20 years that we spent 0 moments talking about.
A combined 5 minutes over 2020.
Yeah. And the other big talking point is that they're like, oh, why did we have to do this now? Like, for the last year, not a single American soldier died. Like, how could you say this wasn't sustainable? It's like, no shit, because the peace deal that like Trump signed with the Taliban
and was too much of a fucking bitch to fall through on.
The reason there weren't any attacks on U.S. troops is because the Taliban were like, okay, well, yeah
you're leaving. You told us you're leaving. And Trump was too much of a fucking bitch to pull the trigger. He was going to do it as an election stunt, and they scared him into holding off, and then it took fucking Irish Joe to actually follow through because he doesn't care anymore.
The deep state didn't even threaten Trump's family. They were like, yeah, we're gonna pull the plug on the Regis hologram that you talked to. And he was like, no!
I've just been thinking about Trump again for two reasons. Like, obviously because, like, you know, these soldiers that just got killed in a suicide bombing, like, expect to know every detail of their lives.
Oh, yeah.
Expect to have, like I said, between 9 to 25 congressional hearings and independent commissions about this. But I was just remembering back, we talked about it on the show before, but those soldiers that got killed in Niger in like the first 4 days of Trump's administration, and they were just like, they didn't even recover the bodies.
Nope, just left.
They were left to be eaten by vultures. And I'm just reading like the Guardian account of like the follow-up where it said like he called the widows and made them cry because he told one of the widows over the phone that her husband, quote, knew what he signed up for.
Yeah.
But it hurts anyway, and it made me...
But even a media that hated Trump didn't really talk about it that much because we don't really want to get into, hey, why are we in Mali in the first place? These aren't questions that we really want to focus on.
Oh, yeah. If you think they're not covering Afghanistan, wait till you see the combined numbers on AFRICOM operations. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, there will be endless tears about the 12 military members. But I think it was, they're still counting it, but it was 90 Afghans, I think.
Yeah.
And just nothing. Nothing.
Just one more hit on Trump here. He's doing the media rounds today, and this was from an interview with Hugh Hewitt just today or the other day, and he says he's speaking, of course, about Biden, and you know he's like, look, this is Sleepy Joe. Like, this never would have happened. This never would have happened if I was president.
Because you wouldn't have pulled out because the handsome generals would have done a puppet show for you, and you would have gotten scared.
So Trump says, and they respected us. They respected me, but they respected us, and I don't think the Taliban wasn't watching because ISIS is tougher than the Taliban and nastier than the Taliban, and ISIS was watching, and then they didn't exist anymore, and we took out the founder of ISIS, al-Baghdadi, and then, of course, Soleimani. Now, just so you understand, Soleimani is bigger by many, many times than Osama bin Laden. The founder of ISIS is bigger by many, many times, al-Baghdadi, then Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden had one hit, and it was a bad one in New York City, the World Trade Center. But these other two guys were monsters.
Wow.
Oh man.
Sorry, it was two hits in New York City, Trump. I mean, let's be serious. Those are two big singles.
And a cruise missile into the Pentagon.
Yeah. But I love that he is claiming, he's attacking Biden and claiming this glory for himself by basically saying, Osama bin Laden, he wasn't such a bad guy.
he was fine. He was good.
He wasn't large, okay? Dude. These other guys, they're very big.
I thought he would love bin Laden because bin Laden was very tall.
He's a big guy.
Yeah, but like, do you think this is... I read a bit deeper into this when he said one hit in New York City, which is amazing. It makes him sound like he's talking about like a boogie with a hoodie.
Yeah.
Like, he had one big song in the summer of 2018. But like, is that, did you think like the first weekend the CIA was like, hey, like, listen, we did like hit the Pentagon with a hologram with the, like, cover up this like stem cell trafficking ring or whatever, you know? And he's like, you can't tell anyone. And he just accidentally took credit away for the Pentagon attack from Al Qaeda. That's what I'm reading into it.
I just, you know, like more on the war that journalism is waging now against Irish Joe. This is one of my favorite tweets from this morning. This is Josh Rogan. I don't know if you guys remember that guy. He's
Seth's younger brother.
He's a lesser Eli Lake.
Josh Rogan is like, he's like the R2-D2 to Eli Lake's Luke Skywalker.
Exactly. He says, Josh Rogan tweets here, the D.C. National Security Establishment is not trying to, quote, punish Biden for ending the Afghanistan war. For 2 weeks, the singular, all caps, focus I've seen is hundreds of people trying desperately to save their Afghan friends' lives and mostly failing.
Well, damn, sounds like they should have never been in charge of any of that. Sounds like you should fucking boot them home.
Yeah.
Sounds like they fucking suck at the one job they said they were supposed to do.
Emphasize failing there.
My comment here is they evacuated 50,000 people last week. How many friends does this guy have? It's like Josh Rogan does not even have friends who are American. Yeah. I do not believe he has that many Afghan friends.
None of these people do.
And like, also, isn't that a little bit unethical for like journalists and national security people to be like, this is all about my friends.
My homies.
Yeah.
Yeah. My chosen family.
We don't have friends. We have family.
Yeah.
I need them here for Friendsgiving.
Will, could I grab a self-serve?
Sorry, no selfs.
Well, it looks like I'll just kill myself.
The other bit of Biden news, did you guys see Kamala in Vietnam paying tribute to the brave Defense Forces of the NVA?
Yeah.
Laying a wreath at the memorial that marks the spot where John McCain's plane was shot down over Hanoi.
Does she actually think that it's like a memorial? Does she think that the people of Vietnam... Or like the guy, he was so good at bombing our light bulb factories that we wanted to honor him.
To be fair, McCain himself laid a wreath at the same memorial, which is, I don't know, maybe a little bit different.
It's like Mr. Bean speaking at the funeral of a dowager that he dropped in a Claire down her cleavage. It's just so fun. It's just that they think that's like for the Vietnamese, even like especially love John McCain because of his resolve, but like. Like, this is humiliating. This is humiliating. Like, they shot you down with like probably like a 70-year-old AA gun.
This is not an accident. Kamala didn't want to do that. She knew what the implications were. But I guarantee you, Irish Joe was like, no, we are ending the American KKK and Empire, and that begins with us paying proper tribute to the heroes of the Vietnam War.
Yeah. Well, what is the
Congressional Medal of Freedom for Jane Fonda coming up?
What is the Jackanon reading into that event?
Who's Jackanon?
Jackanon is Joe's the Storm. He's been undercover for 40 years as a U.S. senator.
He's going to bring down the deep state.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Jackanon is, yes, it's Biden Jack. Is the real Q.
Yeah.
But he's Jack.
Yeah.
It's Jack.
It goes all the way. Yeah.
He's been doing drops that are cryptic and strange, but it's just him speaking on television.
Yeah.
The seers have to parse what his words mean.
Yeah. I think it's like probably like an admission that he was at the military tribunal where they killed John McCain a few years ago. And also subjecting Kamala to sound waves.
Yeah, that's true. Kamala got Havana syndrome.
Yeah, it was sending Kamala to see the grave of another guy killed in a military tribunal and then going, that's about to be you. Enjoy these sound waves.
The other thing, like, regarding the media and Biden, like you said, like just the contrast between the way they covered him during the election and certainly the Democratic primary to now is so incredible. And like the most vivid depiction of that is someone shared, it was a transcript of the that the New York Times did of his interview with George Stephanopoulos. And I've never seen them do this before, but they included all of the stuttering in his statement. They literally transcribed it verbatim. So it, of course, when you read it, just like when we all saw it on TV, we're like, what a bunch of fucking gibberish. This guy is out to lunch. But like, I swear to God, during the Democratic primary, we all watched those debates. Yep. And I would open the New York Times the next day and they'd be like, our experts grade the debate. And speaking of something where like his eye started bleeding on stage, like eight other people
tooth
just
fell out
teed,
of his
off,
mouth.
Teed off on him. Like, yeah, just
started just lying.
It's just, yeah. Yeah. And they were like, B+. Biden kept his head above water and performed admirably.
Yeah.
The only good moment Biden had at any debate was when he like, he did one of his Irish tricks. And when like, you know, Trump was like, your son's disgusting. He's a drug addict. And he's like, my son, Bo, went to Afghanistan and he's dead. He's not a drug addict. And Trump actually like looked, he put him on his back heels for once.
He got confused for a second.
Yeah, no, Joe Biden threw like he was getting his ass kicked, then like grabbed a fistful of sand and threw it in Trump's face.
Yeah, Trump has no combo reaction to like just weepy Irish sentimentality because he has never cared about any human being. Yeah.
He was inside Biden's AOE for that attack.
Yeah, yeah. Trump did not have the iframes for that. he's above like 90% weight burden. He was fat rolling.
I saw someone angrily be like, apparently Joe Biden brought a bow at this current, today's press conference. And someone was just like, you can't just bring a bow as a mulligan every time your American soldiers die. And I was like, wrong, bitch. Yeah, no,
He will never stop doing that. You were fine with him the last 500 times he did it. Joe and Bo should be commended because they did the wall in reverse. The son goes to war.
Oh, right, yeah.
And dies. He doesn't die in the war, but dies. The son goes to war and dies. The dad has a non-linear recapture of every moment of his life. Like, the dad is Bob Geldof in the movie, where he's sitting in a hotel room, but instead of, like, smoking and doing drugs, he's, like, drinking a milkshake and, like, watching TV and thinking about, like, the pressures of being the star, of being the president, of being the star for so long. And then he like goes through every moment of his life. He remembers like, you know, his mom giving him like canola oil when he was sick with like mumps or some shit in 1912. He remembers corn pop. He remembers all that shit. He remembers all his loves. And then
he remembers them all as animated sequences.
Yeah, exactly. And then he's like, wait, I have to destroy the wall. I've built the wall. I have to destroy the wall. And then that's what else happens to the wall? The guy comes in the theater.
He becomes a fascist at one point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The guy comes in the theater and he's like, are there any Jews or gay people in the audience? You look gay. And I haven't figured out what character that is yet. Maybe Nancy Pelosi, not sure. But they're assuredly doing the wall in reverse.
Dr. Jill, do you think they'll drop the bomb?
Jack, do you think she's good enough for me? And okay, the lyric in Mother, the line, she won't let you fly, but she might let you sing. That's all the times Joe tried to run for president and failed. And the song, this is more the album, but the song Vera Lynn, the only lyrics to Vera are, does anybody remember Vera Lynn? Does anybody remember when she would say blah, blah, blah? Does anyone feel the way I do?
That's just a speech.
That's
a speech.
That's a speech he would give. And then the next song, the exact next song after Vera, is Bring Our Boys Back Home.
Holy shit.
That's, dude.
We're just checking every box on the list here. Roger Waters, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on the show.
Yeah, we want to talk to you about how you made one of the greatest concept albums of all time about Joe Biden.
All hard words. Just a break in the wall.
I guess just like to illustrate, once again, I'm turning to the New York Times to illustrate, you know, the forces arrayed against Mackinon and all the seers and experiencers out there who are, you know, they're channeling the Joe Biden right now.
Yes.
You know, like we are, you know, going to war with the deep state and the several arrangements of letters that currently blew up 12 of our brave soldiers in Afghanistan. This is, of course, Ryan C. Crocker. Could not have the Dickensian perfection in the naming of this guy here. He was, of course, the ambassador to Afghanistan under President Barack Obama. just like the pure snake that he is, now coming in to stab Joe in the back here. Why Biden's lack of strategic patience led to disaster.
Yeah, not enough patience.
Strategic patience.
If you'd only waited another
20 years.
Maybe 40, maybe 60.
Strategic patience. Ryan Crocker writes, as Americans, we have many strengths.
No, wrong.
Yeah, I'll stop you right there, buddy.
Yeah.
Just pure weaknesses, buddy.
Yeah, that is the Snopes meter is going crazy right now.
But strategic patience is not among them. We have been able to summon it at critical times, such as the Revolutionary War and World War II, both of which took about 1/10 of the length of Afghanistan
exactly.
War. Yeah.
Had progress, a forward momentum, yeah. A point.
Yeah, exactly. Where, for example, Congress did not threaten to defund the war effort if it wasn't wrapped up by 1944. yeah, because that was World War II.
That was World War II,
not Afghanistan.
God, these
buddy.
Psychos. World War II, man, it was the crucible that all this shit, national security state was built in, all these structures were built in, and it's the only frame of reference that makes sense of American foreign policy.
Because it's the only one that can be like defended.
Yeah.
And like on any like strategic or moral level. And also it's the only one we've won since then.
One, yeah.
What? My God.
Well, the Gulf War maybe, but like does that,
oh,
that was
come
like
on.
That was a
I mean
scrimmage.
That was a
setup. Was
a scrimmage, you might as well put that in the same category.
No, the Gulf War was
anima.
The Gulf War was a setup. It doesn't count.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was some Baudrillardian shit. That didn't actually happen.
Yeah, he says in Korea, nearly 7 decades after an inconclusive truce, we still have 28,000 troops.
Yeah, that's
a great idea.
Great.
We should do that. That
great.
Makes sense.
We're awesome.
Good idea.
But our patience is not the norm. And it certainly has not been on display in Afghanistan as the world watched the Taliban storm into Kabul. As the enormity of the events in Afghanistan this past week sinks in, the questions start. How did this happen? Yeah, that's a good fucking question to start asking. How did it start? Well, it happened because we invaded Afghanistan in 2001.
A lot of fucking nerve for this guy, career diplomat.
He was Obama's ambassador to Afghanistan.
Last was ambassador to Afghanistan. How did this happen? I don't know. What do you think, fucker?
How could we not have foreseen it? Why didn't the Afghan security forces put up a fight? Why didn't we do something about corruption? We are the corruption.
We're the swamp. We are the fucking swamp.
Everything
we
touch turns to shit.
We went there. And we're like, why don't we make this into Florida? Why don't we turn this fucking land into Jacksonville?
We helicoptered into Afghanistan on top of pallets of $100 bills and said, who are the biggest disgusting perverts and pedophiles and murderers you have who will not blink an eye about collaborating with a demonic foreign power to rule over this country?
Yeah.
I can't believe that they fucking took some public money.
You remember when...
I wonder what the fucking contractors did.
You remember during the Iraq War when the New York Federal Reserve like literally did a cash transfer of $9 billion in cash from the New York Federal Reserve to Baghdad on a military C-130 cargo plane. As soon as it touched down at the Baghdad airport, let's just say certain organizations were just like, hey, could you sign for this? Nope. And then it's just gone.
Like Fidel
just
Castro
disappeared.
And the $1 trillion bill.
Yeah, it just disappeared.
Episode. Give what back?
It says, the list goes on. There is one overarching answer. Our lack of strategic patience at critical moments, including from President Biden. It has damaged our alliances, emboldened our adversaries, and increased the risk to our own security. It has also flouted 20 years of work and sacrifice.
There was no work. The fact that it collapsed overnight proves that there was no fucking work.
I mean,
if you are arresting me after T-boning this minivan, you are flouting the 10 stop signs that I stopped at perfectly on the way there.
This whole op-ed should just be called, I was shit. I was shit.
We tried being the country that we were supposed to be. If we were to go back to Afghanistan, which we wouldn't, it would be with a healthy attitude, which would not happen.
The United States' objective in Afghanistan has always been clear.
Oh, really?
Has it? Really? Yeah.
Someone should have let us know. That might have helped
the
ambassador. Strategic patience thing.
To ensure that the objective
has
always been
clear. Hit me.
To ensure that Afghan soil is never again used to plan attacks against the American homeland.
Okay, that's stupid then, and I don't care. No one did for like 5 minutes. It was about getting bin Laden And then it's like, oh, he's gone. Oh, well, we're just going to hang around. And then we just then, never like, heard about it again until today.
And if that was the strategic objective, then like that implies that like going forward in the future, if there is any soil on the surface of the planet that like a terrorist is like, currently thinking
how hard
about,
is it to plan a terrorist
thinking
attack?
About are we going to
occupy? Are we going
to
occupy?
Do
are we going
to
occupy like Berlin? Are we going to occupy Egypt? Are we going to just anywhere
there
any of these
cities,
people go? Are we going to go to Saudi Arabia? Are we going to invade that?
There are cities in Syria that are run by Al-Qaeda, as in they are the governing structure of the city. Modern cities with like communication infrastructure and access to international airports and shit. Why the fuck would you go to a goddamn cave in the middle of the fucking the Hindu Kush?
It says it was not okay. That it was not about nation building as an end in itself, or building a new democracy, or even regime change. I mean, this is. I hate to use this word. This is gaslighting.
This what, is literally.
But what he's saying, though, gaslighting. The implication of that, we're not going to actually build a sufficient governing structure to stand on its own and not become a terrorist breeding ground. That means we just have to be there forever.
Yeah.
That means
no,
we
yeah,
have
that's,
to be there
that's exactly,
forever. This, like, well, when Max Boot said
that's
Indian,
called strategic
Indian Wars,
patience.
It's like, yeah, that's what this means. It always means that like we're there now. This is just where we are. Like we're still in South Korea, like we're in Germany, like we're in Italy, like we're in Japan, like we're in the fucking Philippines.
I will give this guy credit for at least being open about that and not being like the people who are like, or relatively open, not being like the people who are like, no, it's fine to leave. We just did it the wrong way.
Yeah.
I mean, I will. He won't fully come out and say literally there forever like everywhere else, but as close as a guy like this will ever get.
It says, the message from the Bush administration to the Taliban after 9/11 made this clear. If you hand over Al-Qaeda leadership, we will leave you alone.
Nope,
they literally
wrong.
Offered
they
to
offered
do that.
Incorrect.
They literally made
lie,
that exact
lie,
offer
lie.
To the Bush administration. Yeah. And then, oh yeah, we will leave you alone.
Nope, incorrect.
The Taliban chose to fight instead.
Nope, wrong. Lie.
Well, I mean, we chose to fight them, and yep. I guess we see the results.
Yeah.
They won.
Yeah. Well, they wanted it more.
Once the Taliban were defeated, you know, the slight asterisk on that clause right there, our fundamental mission of ensuring that that Afghanistan was never again the base for an attack on the United States did not change.
Yeah, that's like saying like that the Atlanta Falcons defeated the Patriots in the first half of the Super Bowl.
But the means to that end became much more complex, and the development of those means would require patience. When I arrived at Bagram Air Force Base in January 2002 to take charge of our... Oh, this guy was also working for the Bush administration as well. I forgot about that. When I arrived at Bagram Air Force Base in January 2002 to take charge of our reopened embassy, Afghanistan had nothing. Essentially no government, no institutions, no army, no police. What it did have at Bagram Air Force Base was a giant torture dungeon. just a yawning vacuum. And vacuums in the greater Middle East tend to be filled by actors who do not wish us well. Hamid Karzai had arrived in Kabul just a few days before me as chairman of the Afghanistan Interim Authority. He and I spent a lot of time together in those initial weeks. He never seemed discouraged by the enormity of the task in front of him. He did not hesitate to make decisions, many good, some not so much. He had a vision of a stable and secure Afghanistan that threatened no one. It would be a long process, he said, but he had the patience for it. So did we, at least initially. Helping Afghans create a stable, open society could also be the best way to further our own national security objectives. This concept had strong bipartisan support on the Hill as a wave of congressional visitors to Kabul would attest. And that's the other thing. Is like I've seen a lot of people lamenting that like after 9/11, the country was united to defeat a common enemy. Now we're more divided than ever. It's just like this problem was caused by how united this country was after 9/11. That's not a good thing.
Anytime there's national unity, we all unify to do the dumbest thing possible.
Dumbest, worst,
every
the worst
time.
Possible
the most
outcome.
Monstrous thing.
This is
And like what they're lamenting is that like, you know, the nonpartisan consensus about foreign policy is breaking down.
Yeah. It's now an actual political football. The war on terror framing is politicized. And if that's bad news for them, because there really is nobody who wants to take that on. Like both parties pretend to be now like they're against interventions. And that's bad news. So, you know, it'd be a shame if a bunch of bombs went off in the middle of a very high profile evacuation.
I mean, I have seen that like a polls last week show that a majority of Americans, like by 60%, still were in favor of the withdrawal. After another week of the media coverage of this, it's down to 45%.
They're going to keep chipping.
And it's like 40% are opposed to the withdrawal. And that is under like the unified, like the unified field theory of like media programming of like how people get their news in this country. And they still can't get a majority of plurality of people to be against the withdrawal. But definitely Biden's approval rating has ticked down because of this. He has taken a hit on this.
He's underwater for the first time. He's snorkeling with Kamala.
But the thing is, though, like, if we want to talk about this in like crass horse race political terms, if he decides or if he is going to run again in 2024, which is an open question. I mean, I think maybe he did this because he had never had any fucking interest in. I mean, he never thought that would be a realistic option for him, given his brain and body.
Yeah. I really wanted it, to be honest with you. I was really looking forward to it. It would have been, the chills and spills.
But like, for Biden and like the Democrats, which are like anyone who runs for president, I'm sure like this will be hung around their neck for certain. It was good of him to do this now rather than wait a couple of years, because I guarantee you by the time the next 2024 election rolls around, people probably won't care about
this.
Oh,
God.
No. I mean, I don't think they really care about it now. I just think like when they're asked a question and like the most, like, do you support Joe Biden's decision to kill American soldiers?
Yeah, exactly.
To humiliate the United States military? Like, yeah, like you'll get the answers you want.
Exactly. People don't even remember the shit Trump did in 2017, even with the Democratic effort against him in 2020. It was just like the last year of hits for him. Granted, a bit of that was because of COVID, but this, no, like for better or for worse, we have a very short memory in this country now.
So what we always say, like, you'll be angry about something next week.
Yep. Yeah. Same thing I tell people when they yell at Matt Brunig. And I'm always right.
Skipping ahead a little bit, he says, clearly, there were also problems. I mean, and then like in contrast to the girls' schools he just talked about, and that lots of everyone in Congress visited and loved so much. But clearly, Stephen A. Smith's voice, clearly there were also problems. Chief among them, corruption. Karzai and the later President Ashraf Ghani presided over governments where corruption was rampant. When vast resources are poured into a country without established institutions and rule of law, corruption is likely to be a significant byproduct. The country he's talking about is America, by the way. The country without good institutions or a rule of law, that's us. This is not to excuse corrupt officials. It is to recognize the ubiquity of the problem and our role in it. Look at our own history as instructive. Corruption was endemic in New York, Boston, and Chicago through much of the 19th and 20th centuries. It took us time to grow the institution.
Once again, this is anti-Irish bias.
Yes. This is, oh God, I'm so mad right now. The racism that we face, the community in this country, there's still New York, Boston, that's coded language.
It absolutely is.
That's coded language. Through much of the 19th and 20th century. By the way, New York state politics is insanely corrupt in the 21st century.
The only difference now, instead of like, a guy giving you $20,000 and then your cousin works at his company, is now that you're like making that deal with like Foxconn.
Yeah, no, it's like New York in the 21st century is like Andrew Cuomo literally disappears the bodies of 12,000 elderly people who died in like fucking abattoirs owned by a campaign donor versus Boss Tweed. You would get that turkey on fucking Christmas. You know what I'm saying? Your cousin could get that road contract. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like the money was trickling down.
Chicago used to be so corrupt, like Rahm Emanuel fixed it. We would never have something like two consecutive mayors covering up police murders.
So he goes here, it took us time to grow the institutions and legal structures that would eventually make corruption the exception rather than the norm. Look, I'm sorry, like even in his like Bill the Butcher like fantasia of what New York politics was like in the days of the Five Points, I'm sorry, it was nothing like fucking Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Okay? It was not like just scores of people being killed every day and like
not in a like an insurgency against the state.
Yeah, like I mean, like, yeah, it was violent or whatever, but like Lower Manhattan didn't become like the world's greatest exporter of opium at the time.
I think this guy literally watched Gangs of New York.
Yeah. He goes here, and that returns me again to the central theme: time and patience. As our own history attests, societal change is a slow process. Witness the 11 years of our new country spent moving from the Declaration of Independence to the Constitution. Even then, issues like slavery were papered over, only to erupt in a civil war 74 years later. Okay, this is the timeline he's talking about here. That's 74 plus 11, which is...
Yeah, 20 is...
Yeah, exactly.
20, what's that? What's 20 years?
The Civil War analogy is amazing because that's like, I mean, well, that's like literally a war that we like, the good guys ended up kind of losing.
Yeah, in the long run.
Yeah. Overall, like, they didn't get to keep slavery, but they certainly got to keep their way of life.
Yeah.
And also, like, while the Civil War was going on in this country, like, I mean, like, England could have easily just been like, look at the chaos and instability that, like, happens when our empire leaves a country. They can't get it right. You know, they need King George's time and patience. He goes, yet we seem unable to appreciate that other societies will find the challenge just as difficult, and even more so if the engine of change is a foreign army. I recall that comment attributed to a captured Taliban fighter from a number of years ago. You Americans have the watches, but we have the time.
Who? What commander was that? Gary V? That was like, that. I don't even think that guy was like captured. Like, I think they just gave him up. They were annoyed by that guy. He was always saying stuff like that. He was always giving like unk wisdom.
If I go into the Kabul airport and it stank, I'm stealing something.
Mind of Mullah Omar.
Sadly,
she a pussy got me acting strange.
Sadly, that view proved accurate. The Taliban outlasted us and our impatience. I just like, we've talked about this for like 3 or 4 episodes in a row now. The fucking way that these people talk about like you and I and just like the American people in general is just like, they're just like we're children. They just like they have an attitude that like we are just like spoiled children who just don't understand what patience means.
Yeah, we're babies. It's kind of amazing that they are so generous as to let us choose our leaders the way that they do. I'm really grateful for that.
I'm always blown away with like how generally like pliant Americans are. Like obviously you can look at COVID and go like, oh well, like half the country isn't like. Wasn't wearing masks or like isn't getting the vaccine, but like everything else, like,
well, if it doesn't affect them personally, they're fine.
Yeah. Everything else, like health insurance, like just the price of basic goods going up long before the supposed inflation surge now, every indignity that every American suffers, just not totally fine with it. We're a people. The Angloids like love being abused. They appreciate it. That's why like half of them want to get back in there. But Americans will just be abused and convince themselves it's not happening.
And also the list of things that they'll endure, the forever war in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
The premise of this article that there was some public outcry, some pressure to get us out is just wrong.
Yeah.
People had forgotten about Afghanistan. Nobody gives a shit about Afghanistan.
And like, yeah. It's a popular policy because when people are asked, like,
should we get out of Afghanistan?
They're like, shit, I didn't know we were still there.
Yeah, exactly.
They probably it's just like, assumed we should get out
of there.
Yeah.
I would like to get out of there. And but like, nobody was clamoring for it. It was not an electoral issue. Biden didn't run on it. It was a discreet choice by an administration. It is not being powered by public opinion. The entire premise of the article is incorrect.
Americans don't like thinking about this shit ever. Never.
I guess after the Soviet defeat in Afghanistan at the hands of the U.S.-trained and armed Mujahideen in 1989, training that was facilitated by Pakistan, we decided we were done. We could see the Afghan civil war coming. The only thing holding the disparate Afghan groups together was a common enemy. But that was not our problem. We were leaving. Who is this? Philip Seymour Hoffman's character from fucking Charlie Wilson's War? On the way out, we stopped helping Pakistan in a key way. We ended security and economic assistance because of its nuclear weapons program, something we'd exempted before. So Pakistan, in its own narrative, went from being the most allied of allies to the most sanctioned of adversaries. That is why Pakistan threw its support to the Taliban when they started gaining ground in the 1990s. It could end a dangerous conflict along Pakistan's own unstable borders. And that is why a decade later, after 9/11, Pakistan welcomed the return of the United States and U.S. assistance. Blah, blah, blah. I'm just going to skip ahead here. It was not only the current president showing impatience. President Donald Trump announced that peace talks would convene in Qatar between the United States and the Taliban. But those took place without the Afghan government. We had caved on a longstanding Taliban condition. We therefore delegitimized the government we had pledged to support. The Taliban did eventually allow the government representatives into the room, but the talks went nowhere. As that painful process unfolded, we added injury to insult, forcing the Kabul government to release 5,000 Taliban prisoners. It's like, what are they, like, this is the funny thing, is like, what is Ryan Crocker really referring to here when he talks about they shut out the Afghan government? We let the Afghan government down. Like, who are you really talking about there? Like, Kabul. Like, they're talking about a couple guys in the one, like, the major city in Afghanistan.
All of the big opium dealers. All the big players, the guys at the co-op at the Holiday Inn in The Wire, basically.
That didn't matter to Mr. Trump. He was done with patience and just wanted out, whatever the consequences. He reached an agreement with the Taliban for that complete withdrawal, but left office before he could execute it. Enter Mr. Biden. To my shock, he embraced Mr. Trump's Afghanistan policy. We have betrayed our promises to interpreters, women and children, and others who are now trapped in Afghanistan, controlled by the Taliban. I fear many will lose their lives because of Mr. Biden's impatience. We had their backs until Mr. Biden decided we didn't. They will pay for it. Well, I mean, he's right about the last part, but, like, we never had anyone's fucking back in that country. What the fuck? Like,
we were killing them. We were training death squads. We were fucking bombing hospitals. Like, we were stacking their fucking civilian bodies without any fucking concern for anything other than some nerd ass coin bullshit that these guys all learned at in grad school and then applied not to win a war or to save lives, but so that they get a fucking promotion and a book deal.
It did not have to be this way. When I left Afghanistan as ambassador in 2012, we had about 85,000 troops in the country. The Taliban controlled none of Afghanistan's 34 provincial capitals. When President Barack Obama left office, there were fewer than 10,000 U.S. troops. And when Mr. Trump departed, there were fewer than 5,000. The Taliban still did not hold any major urban area. Now they hold the entire country. What changed so swiftly and so completely? We did. Mr. Biden's decision to withdraw all U.S. forces destroyed an affordable status quo that could have lasted indefinitely at a minimum cost in blood and treasure.
First of all, $300 million a day. What's that? Fliff, not even counting it.
Fliff like a sultan.
But fucking Afghans would have been dying this whole time. The Americans stopped dying because we made a deal with the Taliban, but that was in exchange for them tearing the shit out of the Afghan army, which was getting their asses kicked. And who was returning fire in their own war crimes? People were fucking dying.
I love the idea that, like, this was just infinitely sustainable. And you know what? Like, he's right. Like, that's what our government is set up to do. But, like, what's so fucking $300 million a day. Overall, the entire cost of the Afghanistan war represented, as I've talked about before, between $2 and $3 trillion transferred from public coffers to five defense contractors.
Yeah.
That's what this is all about.
Yeah.
And they want that. They want that laundromat to just stay open.
Yeah.
Keep washing all that money. And it is so doubly infuriating. It's like almost a cliche to say it. Like, and I hate it. But, like, $3 trillion over 20 years to produce this result. And Bernie's Medicare for All bill is $1.3 trillion over 10 years. Like, if we had just spent that money, every single American could have health care. And the thing they always say is just like, oh, Medicare for All, that's going to cost $1 trillion. Like, as opposed to this shit?
Yeah. But that's spending money
on American citizens.
We can't bomb it, which is the fun part about building a hospital.
You get
to strafe it with a fucking C-130.
Even if Afghanistan is what they say it is, which I guess is like the like doom, wherever the Legion of Doom hung out in, the big underwater thing. Where they are just, all they care about is planning attacks on America and executing them. Even if it was that, and we're leaving it to let it go back to being that, and there was a 9/11 that just, they happened at random every other fucking day, it would be infinitely more beneficial for America to just leave it at that and implement Medicare for All. Way less people would die.
Like, way fewer. Like the net, like, lives saved versus lost is so massively weighted to, like, how many, like, American lives would be saved by Medicare for All versus anyone that may theoretically be killed in a terrorist attack, which, like, let's be honest, you're more likely to get killed by a great white shark on land than you are to be killed in a fucking terrorist attack. And it's just like, also, the media would just be, like, talking about these 12 Americans that died. Like, another reason I don't think people are going to, like, get up for this the way they used to is, like, 900 Americans died in Florida yesterday.
Yeah.
9/11 every day. That's what we've been saying and it's true.
And we have all collectively decided that because we can't figure it out, because it's, well, that would require a political solution, and our political system doesn't work that way. we're just gonna vibe it out. And if we're gonna vibe that out, I think we can vibe out some Marines.
And you know what?
No,
yeah. If we had vibed out all the people that died on 9/11, we'd be way better off than we are now.
That would have been time to do it. Yeah. That would have been time to vibe out some deaths.
Yeah.
To get some fucking perspective.
Be a little stoic, you know? Maybe look the other way.
But no, it's because that happened, because it fractured that idol. We all went insane. But now, 20 years later, after everything that's happened, this collapsing crises and mounting contradictions and body counts and just the public complete collapse of any kind of public interest, it's like, hey, you know, what are you going to do? And that is the one thing we have in our favor to prevent another return to Afghanistan to try to avenge our fallen troops. It's just the absolute, just the deadening of the American people when it comes to death. And we'll see what happens. During the press conference today, Biden, he tried to do some Bush shit. He said, "We're going to hunt you down. We're going to get you." And it's like, okay, Grandpa.
Did he say anything about the August 31st deadline at the press conference?
I had to leave before he was done. Right. But at the end, they did ask him, they said, "Do you regret doing the withdrawal?" And he said, "No." And then he cut the thing short saying, "I've got another meeting."
He's walking right into like a cryo chamber where they're jamming Vyvanse into his neck. I think when he said, "We're going to hunt you down," that was also Mackinon. That's like, we're just going to see that there was a fire in Langley tomorrow.
When he said, "We're going to hunt you down," he was talking about the black and tans.
Yeah.
He goes, let's see here. Even with a full withdrawal, we might have managed steps that would have protected our interests. Well, I mean, I think we did do that. The head of the CIA literally flew to Afghanistan to meet with the leaders of the Taliban.
Yeah, I think everybody.
It's weird how ISIS like just.
Yeah, right?
No,
yeah.
They didn't even come close to him. Weird. It's crazy how these things happen. Oh my God, what a lucky guy!
It's like
lucky little trooper he is.
I'm sure
by the skin of his teeth.
I'm sure there was like something like some ISIS presence in Afghanistan or whatever. But like, try to remember the last time you even heard the word ISIS in the media.
Yeah,
it was like probably 5 years ago.
Yeah, the CIA is at sweeps week.
And guess what? Like, the CIA had a lot to do with the creation of ISIS in the first fucking place.
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah, like, and then yeah, out of nowhere, it's just like ISIS is back. ISIS K.
I'm just so.
It even has a new name. Like, what the fuck?
I'm so happy the CIA director got out safely, though. It was so nail biter, you know.
Yeah, man. They had no problem getting him in and out of that country. That's for sure.
It's like all those people who come from America to Idlib to report on it. Just narrowly making it out.
I really think that like part of this, like, sure, they you know, whatever agencies are on the ground doing shit. You know, it's in the, even if these ISIS guys are doing their shit independently, they have an interest in trying to bring America in. The intelligence community has an interest in trying to bring us back in. But even if they have accepted, okay, fine, we tried to get Joe to punk Joe out, but he was too strong, he had too much grit. Fine. Now we can try to get China in here so we can do Russia again. But I'm sorry, the Chinese aren't as dumb as us. They're not going to default for it.
No.
I just do not think it's going to happen.
I mean, we read President Xi's interview with Thomas Friedman last week.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
China, like, they're fine, like, eating a loss for a little bit. You know, I could see them making a deal with anyone on Earth. If they really want to, they will have the first ISIS Gucci stores up. They'll be fine. They'll figure it out, and you're not going to animate Americans into it. I do think it's interesting. The week before this, though, a memo went around like the liberal media to castigate Spike Lee for talking to 9/11 truthers.
Yeah, I was just about to bring that up.
Yeah,
because like, I mean, like,
very look, interesting.
Benghazi 2 just happened, and let's just say the intelligence community is in a vulnerable. They're feeling a little bit unseen right now.
Yes,
they don't feel seen at the moment. And all I'll say is, I've been watching the local and national news quite a bit this summer. And the number of stories about shark sightings, not attacks, shark sightings at beaches in America lead me to a rather terrifying conclusion about what may be coming down the pike. But yeah, as far as Spike Lee goes, he's already agreed to re-edit the last part of his 9/11 documentary to remove all the... And look, like the people he's interviewing are like the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, like the dumbest part of the 9/11.
Right, right.
Anybody about, like, who wants to talk about jet fuel and building 7 and all that
right,
shit.
Right, no, that's all
cares?
Stupid. That thing, that itself, like him talking to those people, I think like just if you're making a documentary about 9/11, it's interesting to talk to those people.
How could you not?
But just as far as like what they have to say, nah, I've heard it. That's not the interesting angle on that. That's not the string you pull on and things get unraveled.
Let's talk about Saudi Arabia.
But right, exactly. But
or all the shorting of airline stuff.
Yeah.
What was the deal with that?
Larry Silverstein's insurance policy, blah, blah, blah. So much stuff. Did you see that article that I found the other day about the Israelis they arrested?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Much weird shit.
Turns out there were 5 Mossad agents just hanging out across.
And then when they talked to them on Israeli TV, they were like, no, we didn't, like, we were just there to observe it. What's up, man? What's up?
And they had camera equipment and like 8 passports and like thousands of dollars in cash on them.
They got arrested and they told the cops, we're not your problem. The Arabs are your problem.
Yeah.
Weird.
But I do think the utility of that for the liberal media to do that is just to like preemptively just like, no, remember 9/11, remember 9/11, nothing, everything in the 9/11 commission report, don't even think about the missing pages, it's all perfect. Leading up to this, which is Joe bungling our retribution for 9/11. I don't really think it's going to work. Like, this is not 2002. I mean, we talk about how the national security state was built around World War II and the Cold War forever. I think this current one, this sort of media apparatus is built around 9/11, and that obviously doesn't work on Americans anymore.
Well, that's the thing. This Afghanistan withdrawal, the fact that it was allowed to go forward, because, you know, like, they might not be happy with it in the deep state, but they're going through with it on the say of this senile old man. So there clearly has to be some make lemonade out of the lemon situation. And it's got to be the only thing that makes sense. The only juice that's left is China, is in new Cold War with China, the Asian pivot that Obama was trying to start. Because at the end of the day, we have just exhausted our imaginative capacity to fixate on the fucking terror. There've been too many people's grandma choked out in the ICU for us to care about terrorism.
Well, also that, like, I think I just saw a poll the other day that showed there's a majority of the American public is way more concerned about domestic terrorism.
Right. Our enemies are at home. That's why we have to have a big enemy, somebody who can be up to it rather than just this amorphous bullshit.
He goes, so just with Crocker here, he says, now the Taliban hold all the cards. They will determine whether the evacuations through the Kabul airport can proceed. And whatever happens next, the image of this American capitulation is already etched indelibly into the world's imagination. What, like, you know what also is etched into the world's imagination? The Iraq War and the Afghanistan War. Like, yeah. This is the image they're going to think about.
Yep.
If it is that the U.S. Air Force C-17 taxiing for takeoff from Kabul, surrounded by a desperate Afghan mob. Seconds later, at least one man falls to his death from the plane's wheel well. It is eerily reminiscent of the people who jumped from the World Trade Center on 9/11 rather than face death by fire.
Play a new song. Learn a new joke. Something.
What a tragic and painful circle it closes 2 decades later. That's okay. And then it says here, Ryan C. Crocker was a United States ambassador to Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Syria, Kuwait, and Lebanon.
Did a great job.
Both amazing. And democratic administration.
What an amazing job
he's
you've done,
Ryan.
He's
literally the fucking Grim Reaper guy knocking on the door from the memes. He's the actual dude.
Oh, my God. When Ryan Crocker shows up, it is time to change out all your local currency. That shit is not working anymore.
Gold.
My God. This fucking
buy
cocksucker.
Some gold, pick up your fake passport, get the fuck out.
Yeah. Ugh. They should make Ryan Crocker ambassador to Florida. To clean things up down there.
Yeah. I think the Florida situation will require time and patience.
Yeah.
All right. Well, glad to be back in the same room with you guys. We will see how this Afghanistan situation continues to develop. And more importantly, we'll see if Irish Joe, you know,
can he keep it up?
Can he keep it up? I have my doubts. I don't know.
I'm worried for him after that. He did seem a little. He was back to Sleepy Joe, not Irish Joe.
He's sleeping. Somebody needs to give him the fucking the adrenaline needle in the heart, Pulp Fiction style.
Are you guys thinking what I'm thinking? Let's go catch an Acela. He needs our help.
He absolutely does. We need to go down to the D.C. We need to go to the White House. We need to bring a big old plate of corned beef and cabbage. Mm. We need to play him at least 15 different covers of Danny Boy in a row. Get him weepy. Get him thinking about his grandma. Start talking to him about the time him and Joe Louis raised the flag over Iwo Jima. Get his blood flowing again. Remind him who he is. Let Biden be Biden.
Yeah. There has to be, like, in D.C., like, a special track that no one will be on that he can drive a huge car around.
Yes.
We could get a... I mean, there's a Bed Bath & Beyond near me. We could get, like, an ice cream or, like... You, there's such thing as, like, a home-ready, like, malt maker, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, okay, cool. I mean, most people use a blender, but, like, he could tell the difference.
Yeah, no, we gotta get one of those, like, old-timey, like, five-spindle jobs.
Yeah, yeah. We need to be his Jareds.
We will become the Jareds. We will be the official soda jerks of the Biden White House.
Yes. No, yeah, just like, dude, just like how Nixon and his Doberman were the sober... That's us.
Yeah.
We're the creeps.
We got to do... We got to protect him because they'll get to him otherwise. He's just one scared old man. Kamala is there just filled to the brim with infant blood, ready to take over.
Is this a dagger she sees before her eyes?
Yeah. It is really funny to think about Kamala at the press conference today.
Oh, my God.
Like, Joe did not do a very good job, but could you fucking imagine?
Just gazing her way through it.
Sometimes people
the
die.
Loss of life is always born.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait for President Hibbert. Who am I kidding? She's never going to win.
No, unless Joe Biden dies, she will never be president.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's why he sent her to Vietnam. He's playing chess here. This is chess, not checkers. You got to have the pieces on the right parts of the board before you do the Queen's Gambit.
All right. We just got to pray for the storm. We got to pray that Joe somehow is in control of the storm.
Get your popcorn ready.
Enjoy the show, folks.
Enjoy the show.
Yeah, get your corn pops ready.
All right, let's watch some more pants, guys.
Yeah, let's watch some more. Right. Oh my god! So he's so embarrassed. Look at that.
In this video, there are three of him. It's never explained why it's triplicates, but wouldn't you know it? All their clothes come off, and they all have an equally huge dick. Pants, dude. Pants _ dude on Twitter. If you are listening, we think you are probably the best physical comedian in the entire nation.
The Buster Keaton of our generation.
Absolutely. Like, it's like, yeah, he has a huge dick, but also, like, he just the way that he portrays the feeling of, like, getting your pants obliterated by an escalator, incredible. And honestly, I think our country needs Pants Guy because I think we feel like him now.
Yeah, we're all Pants
Guy. We've been humiliated.
Yeah.
My pants fell down at the airport.
Yeah.
All right. Till next time, guys.
Bye-bye.
Till next time.
Okay, this is one where his, like, he just opens his pants with the force of his dick. Awesome.
Love pants. Yeah. Some old patience. I've been walking.